I'm Catherine.
And I'm Alicia, and here we are again, people.
Really, here we are again.
Yeah, technically speaking, y'all don't know this, but we are here yet again. This is our second record of this episode.
You know, I got to say that in 2 years, in over 60 hours of episodes,
yeah,
this is the first time that we've had to completely scrap an episode and re-record. Yeah. So, like, proud of us.
Yes.
But I don't want to talk about this dude again.
I know, but we're going to.
Oh, are we?
Because, you know, another day, another dollar, and another killer road trip episode. My people cheering is just like a screaming, like.
Your people cheering is kind of like a single person going. And mine is.
Yeah, no, you do it. You do it right. And I do it.
I kind of like the.
Not well. I do it not well.
I like the idea of a crowd full of people and just one guy going, yeah. But yeah, that's a bunch of people cheering because we know, listeners, that you are cheering physically out loud at this moment. And we are super excited to be back on our bullshit. And we're here to give you another horrible case from this wonderful country that we are so happy to live in.
Yep. It's a little iffy recently.
Oh God.
Yes. And this series that we do is definitely not a great way to sell the United States, but it sure is an interesting way to deep dive into some really weird and typically pretty horrible cases. If you're new here, hello and welcome to our killer road trip tour. These episodes are exactly what they sound like. We're going state to state in a road trip fashion, and digging up cases that span a whole range of things. Sometimes we talk about serial killers, sometimes we talk about spree killers, and we even hit on some unsolved cases. Although those to me tend to be the most unsettling. I hate them.
She hates them. I enjoy a good unsolved story, but I think that's because I've been conditioned by my deep love for BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, they're coming out with a new ghost show.
I know.
Not BuzzFeed. Watcher. Don't care about BuzzFeed. Love Shane and Ryan. But I think I've just been conditioned by that show just to like, I kind of like unsolved things, but I understand that many people, including my partner in podcasting, like a solution.
Yeah.
And
the unsolved ones just stay with me for a really long time. And
yeah, because nobody just knows.
Upsetting.
I love not knowing because the day I know everything, I might as well stop.
I mean,
you know, I know you like to know things, but and I like to know things, but it gives me like a thirst for more.
Yeah.
Because I'll never know everything in the world. Like I'll never know.
I mean, that's true.
My whole life, there will always be more to learn. I think that's super, we're not going to get into this. But anyway, speaking of things to learn, before we start this metaphorical road trip, not physically, we're not driving from state to state, although you know I would love to do this.
That's the dream, you know.
It is the dream. A show.
A show.
You know, one day. We're all the way in Idaho today. Who the ho?
No. Wow.
I just had to do it once. But before we launch into today's case, we are, of course, going to do our obsession confessions. If you don't know what this is, I just said obsession confession, if you could not understand what I just said.
Confessions.
And this is a little section of our show where we share with y'all something that we are currently obsessed with in hopes that you may find something that you also enjoy and you can also get to know us a little bit better. Shall I start?
Yeah, absolutely. Mine has for sure changed since the last time we recorded this.
As have mine. No. But it's in the same vein. It's in the same vein because
I bet.
Yeah, you know what I've been up to. You know.
Yeah, you go ahead. You go first.
Yeah. last we spoke, and I'm not talking about me and Alicia, I'm talking to you and me, dear listener. I told you all about the cultural phenomenon continues to be the most streamed show in the US for 8 weeks in a row, and that is Our Flag Means Death, Suck It, Moon Knight, or whatever you're called. I love my gay pirate boys. They're everything to me. And when I think I've said this multiple times, but I can't remember, honestly. when I like a filmmaker or an actor or somebody in the industry, I will go back and look at their entire catalog of work and then like watch it all from the beginning so I can see like where they, you know, I love this thing that they're in currently, but like, what was the first thing they made? You know, what was the third thing they made? So I figure out, you know, and it's a cool little deep dive. I enjoy doing it. It's cool to see how people's careers begin in a field that I want to go into. So yeah, you can learn a lot. And a lot of times you can watch some really crappy movies, but you know, some of them are good. So right now I'm doing that with Rhys Darby and Taika Waititi, who a lot of their careers coincide and mix together because they're friends and they are collaborators. So
yeah,
that's kind of fun.
Like Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen.
Yes, they do a lot of things together, but much cuter and from New Zealand. So I've been doing that. And I think the last time we talked, I said something about a podcast and then, you know, some other stuff like that. No, I'm not talking about the last time we recorded this episode, I was talking about a podcast, but I've actually changed because, okay, I listened. I started the series, What We Do in the Shadows. And I do love it. You were right. Everyone was right. I had people telling me you're one of your favorite television shows is Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
You love Taika Waititi's work and you are like a gothic spooky person and you've never seen the show What We Do in the Shadows and you like the movie. They're like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I was like, I know, everyone tells me to watch it and that I'll love it, but I just haven't yet. And I started it and I do love it. I'm almost done. As you know, I am a watcher. I watch things. I enjoy having things to watch. I consume a lot of media. I don't go out a lot, so this is my entertainment. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and it's very funny, and it's that quirky Taika Waititi style, and Jermaine Clement, who is very funny as well, and they've worked together since Flight of the Conchords, which I also watched. Which is also another funny show. I like comedians. I like seeing comedians develop their sense of comedy.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. So yeah, I highly recommend. My big recommendation is just like to find someone you really like their work and then like figure out how they started.
For sure.
Like find that awful 16-minute movie they made in college, because it exists out there. You can watch it and you can go, you know what, I can make something like this, and they're Oscar winners now. Like, I don't know, it's kind of like playing 6 degrees of separation, where you can kind of be like, I could do this.
Yeah, we all start somewhere.
Yeah, and it kind of like fills me with determination and inspiration to know that at one point they also made shitty movies in their backyard, which is all I do, you know? So,
yeah, I mean,
I highly recommend it. And I love What We Do in the Shadows, the show. I think season 2 is coming out next month. Not season 2, excuse me. Season 4 is coming out next month. So that's exciting. Also, by the time this episode comes out, Stranger Things 4 will have started. Big cultural phenomenon in the final season of Stranger Things. I love the Russo brothers. I'm sure I'll talk about that soon. Actually, maybe I won't, because spoilers are a big thing.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in 2 parts.
I've never watched Stranger Things.
I know this about you, and I have varying opinions about this. But
and I love Winona Ryder.
She is mom.
Yeah, I was like, whether I would like her in that show or not, I don't know, because once again, I've never seen it. So
she's a fabulous actress. I mean, she could read the phone book and I would be incredibly aroused. So it's, you know, it's
well, I mean,
I just
maybe not the phone book, but yeah,
I just said that to watch your eyebrows raise all the way up your forehead. Okay, I'm done speaking. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know if my obsession this past week and a half is me. I'm obsessed with me. Go me.
Wow.
I know. What a turn.
When we first recorded this, you said it was Jane Austen. So it's been quite a turn.
Yeah. This last week and a half, I've put in a lot of work, artistically speaking. And I've put in a lot of effort, because your girl is going to probably open an Etsy shop, maybe Shopify. Right now I'm trying to figure out like which one of those websites to use. But I've created a lot of artwork consistently. I think like in the span of 4 days, I created 5 pieces, that I've turned into like stickers. Right now I'm like working through my, emotions when it comes to all of the Roe v. Wade situation. So I have a lot of things that are obviously women's, rights geared at this point. And when I open my shop, I'll have like stickers and stuff. I may do prints of the stuff, but honestly, I'll probably stick to the stickers, for now. But yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited about it. I'm proud of myself because I've done it consistently. As an artist, I have a hard time with like being a procrastinator and then also in the same vein being a perfectionist. And sometimes the idea of the end result cripples me into not creating anything. So within the last week and a half though, I've like really did the damn thing. And I channeled a bunch of my rage at this country, into something that I think some people would really like. And I already have people asking me, for the stickers and stuff like that. So I'm excited. I think they're being well received by the people that follow me. And I'm just excited. It's exciting to have this idea. Like, I think I've talked about this in past episodes that I was thinking about starting an Etsy like 18 million years ago. And kind of like the job that I hold now has really given me the freedom, to focus on my job and then outside of my job, be a human being, which is fantastic. So nice. Now I'm getting my side hustle on, and I'm just really happy to have time to be artistic and to be proud of the things that I am putting out into the world. So this last week, my obsession is creating.
It is
nice. It's nice to, and obviously like I still have to make time to do those things. I think that that's one of the biggest problems that I have is, like I said, I get kind of not like, I just get really heavy when it comes to the idea of like the end product. So a lot of the stuff that I've been doing this last week is just starting. Like my brain is like, just something, that's, just start something, yeah. Just put something on there. And that's then by the time it's done, I'm like, wow, I love that. That's every single one that I do. That's my favorite. So I just feel like I'm getting better as I go. And yeah, I just love it.
That's great. No, I mean, that's great. And also your stickers are worthy of people buying them. I've told you that your whole damn life that I've known you.
But moving on, because we actually do have a case today, and today's case is, it's not an easy one to say the least.
Not only is it not easy, but we've already talked about it.
Yeah, it's not easy for us because we have to go through it again. We are going to put a trigger warning on this episode. So moving forward, just so you know, there is talk of sexual abuse along with pedophilia. So we understand if that is difficult to listen to. It's difficult to say out loud multiple times. And here we are. if so, you know, we'll see you on the next one. But everyone else, buckle up, because we are going to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Right. We've said many times here at the Redhead Report, we are advocates for mental health. If this is out of your reach, mental health wise, baby, take care of you. We have 65 episodes that you can go back and listen to. And I promise that it won't hurt our feelings, because we want you to take care of you. It's very important to us. So this week we're discussing Joseph Edward Duncan III. What a name.
Yeah.
What an asshole. Joseph was born in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, North Chakalaka, as we say in my family, who is halfway from North Carolina, in February of 1963. His father, who was shockingly named Joseph Edward Duncan Jr.
Yeah. Had to be two others for him to be the third. So, you know, family never, name.
Never could have seen it coming.
It's a family name.
It is. He was in the army, and this meant that his family moved around a lot.
A lot.
Every 2 years, to be exact. They moved between states and were even sent overseas for some time. Mm-hmm. Joseph Edward Duncan III, who we'll just call Duncan from here on out, was one of five children, and he had three older sisters and a younger brother.
Yes. So obviously a pretty big family. Not that I think that that's out of the ordinary for a military family. But his mom, Lillian May Duncan, which is actually a pretty cute name. I think Lily May is cute. Has been described, though, not cutely. She was actually described as a domineering woman. And Duncan does claim later on in his life that during one of his many arrests, that he was abused as a child. And even if this man turns out to be a massive piece of shit, because he does, we still believe victims here. And it's not an insane jump to believe that he was abused, especially with what he goes on to do.
Right. So Duncan's father eventually retired, and he chose Tacoma, Washington, as the family's forever home.
Gorgeous.
After retiring. Duncan would go on to stay with his mother after his parents divorced. He and his younger brother stayed with their mother.
Yes.
So it's him, also a broken family.
Yes. And he stays with his mom. And Duncan didn't graduate high school. And this is where our case kind of takes a turn, because Duncan goes on to lead a life with a long history of being a violent sexual offender. And his first offense was only at the age of 15. And in 1978, Duncan raped a 9-year-old boy at gunpoint. He was not arrested for this crime, and we actually only know of it because he told a therapist about it. A year after his first violent sexual interaction, he was arrested for driving a stolen car. So he, with, you know, lack of a better term, obviously he raped that 9-year-old boy at gunpoint, which is a pretty bold first offense. And then he doesn't get picked up for that, but he gets arrested for driving a stolen car a year later. And gives the therapist that's on his case that information. So that's pretty insane.
Yeah. Think about being that therapist too. Like,
oh, for sure.
So you stole a car, and he's like, and I raped a 9-year-old boy at gunpoint.
Yeah, he's a lot.
He was sentenced to a juvenile facility called Disland's Boys Ranch, which was in Tacoma. Wow, my accent came out so strong when I said the word ranch.
Ranch.
I am a Southern woman. but that's in Tacoma, Washington, where they don't have Southern accents. This sentencing, unfortunately, did not put Duncan back on the right path. It actually gave him access to younger boys. Duncan told a therapist that he was told a therapist that was put on his case that he had bound and sexually assaulted 6 boys while at the ranch. He also told the same therapist that he estimated that he raped 13 by the time he was 16.
And yeah, so
we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Boys' ranches, whatever, juvenile facilities.
Yeah.
They have a lot of stories like this.
Yes. Whether it's from, you know, lack of supervision, poor security, poor really facilities for children, juveniles, obviously. I'm not saying that they're not needed, because in cases like this where, you know, he's clearly a violent sexual predator. At a young age, it does make you wonder though how he could have done this, especially when he is physically speaking to a therapist on the case, and like it's not like she has, you know, confidentiality with him. Like, she is physically on his case, given to him by the state. So it's weird for him to be able to do that much in a facility where they are technically youth prisoners.
Right. You think there'd be more supervision.
Correct. Right. Especially in situations like he's talking about binding them.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Like, that's a lot of work. I mean, not that I'm, you know what I mean? But like, it's not something that you do like in a small corner of a room, you know what I mean? So he's like doing these really violent, like bold things, and he's doing it to so many boys.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole like boys ranch thing to me, especially if it's sexual predators, sexual assaults, stuff like that, it doesn't really make sense to put other boys in alongside people that they're just going to victimize. And Duncan is a repeat offender. I mean, he's a violent criminal, but up to this point, he's not a murderer. He's just a really obviously sick individual. And we're only saying that he's not a murderer like in legality. Because actually in 1980, so we're skipping ahead just 2 years from his time in the boys' ranch, Duncan stole some firearms from his neighbor and then abducted a 14-year-old boy. He raped this boy at gunpoint and was apprehended afterwards. So he was sentenced to 20 years for this crime and was released after 14 years and put on parole.
I really don't understand early release in a case where someone has like discussed with a with like a court appointed therapist.
Right.
That he has sexually assaulted 13 boys in a very short amount of time. Like, just let the dude sit there for 20 years. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Early parole for sexual predators, I don't think should be a thing. Especially, you know, we've had conversations about like prison being obviously like not the best, a lot of people really want it to be retaliation. But in general, I think that both of us kind of agree that prison should be really rehabilitation and like trying to help
for sure
situations and help the people that are clearly having issues. But yeah, it really doesn't make sense to have somebody like Duncan who has admitted to violent sexual offenses, who is in prison for, you know, getting out of a boys' ranch or a juvenile facility, and then immediately, you know, upping the level of violence to gunpoint and raping a 14-year-old boy. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, that's a pattern of behavior. And then they were just like, you know, you can go. And we've kind of talked before about too, that like sometimes early release happens for different reasons, whether it's funding, you know, obviously here in the United States, we really love a fucking prison. So our prisons typically are overpopulated. And some people end up getting early release just for the sheer fact that the facilities don't have the funds and or the space to physically house, you know, all of the prisoners that are in there, which is a whole topic for another time. But it's really hard to see somebody, especially when what we're about to talk about and what he goes on to do, because, you know, this is the killer road trip tour. And this man is a serial killer. It's just hard to think that, like, if he had actually been held for the amount of time that he was supposed to, that this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough for sure. Because like we said, he sits for the 14 years they let him out, and Duncan was actually arrested again in 1996. This time for marijuana, which was against his parole, even though we wouldn't be surprised if he was doing other things that were against his parole and just common decency in general. You know, once again, it would not shock me in the least if Duncan had been, you know, showing any of that sexual predatory behavior. But he does get caught with marijuana, and he was released again and put back on parole with updated restrictions.
Right.
That's another thing too, like why they put people on parole over and over and over again and they just change the restrictions.
That makes no sense to me.
I'm like, clearly he's not doing well with the parole.
Maybe I don't.
Yeah.
Know, if it like if what's the saying, like once, twice, so I don't know.
My brain was like three times a lady, but
I don't think
but that's not correct. I know that's not what we're talking about. But,
you know, fool me once,
yeah,
fool me twice,
shame on you.
Yeah, shame on me. But anyway, he went on to be arrested again and kept in jail finally from 1997 to 2000, once again on parole, a parole violation. He was arrested this time in Missouri, and although we do not know the parole violation, I feel like it's probably the fact that he was in a different state, because isn't that like rule one?
Yeah, you can't leave this. You can't typically, sometimes you can't even leave like the county.
Yeah, so I'm gonna guess. In March of 2005, Duncan was charged with the July 3rd, 2004 molestation of two boys at a playground in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. On April 5th, 2005, he reappeared before a Becker County judge who set bail at $15,000. But someone came to his rescue. For what?
I know.
A Fargo businessman with whom Duncan had become acquainted helped him post bail. What a dick.
Yeah.
Yes. However, Duncan skipped bail and disappeared. And on June 1st, 2005, a federal warrant was issued for Duncan's arrest on the charge of unlawful flight to avoid prosecution.
Yes. And just to keep people like within the loop, like these things are happening pretty quickly. Like within the span. So he you know, doesn't he skips bail, and then they do a federal warrant on him. And really that brings us to the point of no return, which is Duncan's trip to Idaho. And Duncan, as can be seen by the information so far in this episode, he moves around a lot. He's definitely what we would consider like a transient. He probably also feels comfortable doing that with his military, like childhood, like growing up that way. I'm sure he probably feels comfortable just moving around. And on May 16th of 2005, basically a little over a month after Duncan skipped bail, Coeur d'Alene police officials discovered the bodies of Brenda Grone, her boyfriend Mark McKenzie, and her 13-year-old son Slade Grone, bludgeoned to death in their home. This unfortunately was not all. They had discovered the bodies of the three, but Brenda had two younger kids, Shasta, who was 8, and Dylan, who was 9.
Right. So an Amber Alert was issued immediately for the children, while rescue teams and search parties combed the nearby area. The deaths of Brenda, Mark, and Slade were unsurprisingly ruled as homicides, and the autopsies determined that their deaths were caused by blunt trauma to the head. The victims had also been bound.
Yeah, so a pretty gruesome gruesome murder. And there was really no evidence tying a suspect to the murders, and the police department leaned heavily on the hope of finding the two missing children. They used media outlets and called for help from the community. And they released photos of Dylan and Shasta and waited for someone to hopefully spot them. That has to be a really hard situation to be in for police as well.
Yeah.
A really hard time, especially when you know that there are two kids that are missing. And on top of that, you don't really have very much to go on, except that you're just hoping that someone somewhere in the community has seen them and can help point you in the direction that you need to go.
Yeah, that's hard. And yeah. 7 weeks later, on July 2nd of 2005, Shasta was recognized by a waitress at a Denny's in Coeur d'Alene. She was there eating and at the time unknown man. Can you guess who it is? The waitress, the manager on duty, and two customers recognized the little girl from the news and all called the authorities to report it. Not only did they call the police, but they also worked together to position themselves so that the man could not leave before the authorities showed up. Denny's putting in the work.
Yes. I was like, some good things do happen at Denny's, I guess.
Yeah, only a few good things though.
Yeah. And the police did show up and arrested Duncan without any issue. Shasta was sent to a nearby medical center to be evaluated, and then she was released to her father. Because of course, before Mark McKenzie was Brenda's boyfriend, not her husband,
right?
Or her ex-husband. And the return of Shasta was of course amazing news, but it's pretty obvious that Dylan is not with her and Duncan at the Denny's. And the police once again asked the community for help. They asked the public for details and tips specifically surrounding the red Jeep that Duncan had been driving. The police department knew that it would be unlikely that they would find Dylan alive, and they were correct. Authorities discovered that Duncan had rented the car in Minnesota and never returned it. That's also ballsy. Like, that, I don't know why. Like, I mean, he's done a lot of things, but there's just something in me that's like, I used to be scared when doing a car rental that, like, if I didn't have it back by like an hour before it was actually due back, that like police were just immediately gonna like know where I was,
right? And I mean, like,
in this rental car.
Obviously this is a different time, but like, they track.
Yeah, it's 2005.
I mean, that's a different time. It's 2022. But they track rental
cars. Now they do, for sure.
I don't know if they did then.
Yeah, for sure. Rental cars now have LoJack on them and stuff like that. But you can disable LoJack. Not that I'm telling anybody to do that, but Because I'm sure that people stealing rental cars is not like, it's not, I'm sure it's a daily occurrence. I'm sure that people are stealing rental cars on a daily, like just doing it.
You know, my first Beetle. I've only had two, so it sounds like I have had a bunch. My first Beetle was a rental car.
Oh.
It was a retired rental car that I got. And because of that, there was like all this extra paperwork to prove that I didn't steal it.
Yes. I was looking it up because I was like, what is it? It says that more than 25 out of, or it says of more than 25 million rental transactions by Hertz alone. So Hertz is just one brand, that 0.014% fall into the rare situation where vehicles are reported to the authorities after the company has tried to attempt to reach them like several times. So like that is,
but because my car was a rental, there was
35,000 a year, 35,000 cars stolen every year just by Hertz alone.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot.
But because that Beetle was a rental, there was like this extra step.
Yeah.
Because I mean, obviously I owned the title to it, or yeah, they owned the title. Well, I don't know how it works. But
you're like, I'm not going to pretend to understand that.
It was under my name, but when we first got it, there was all these extra steps to go through because it was a rental car.
Yeah.
And also I was like, who's renting a Beetle?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, I love a Beetle, but when I rent a car, it's to like move something or.
Yes.
You know, like I'm not renting a car, like I'm just going to drive this Beetle around. I mean, maybe that's what people do.
But they're, so when they focused back to our case, of course, when the authorities sent out like that media coverage about the car, gas station employee in Kellogg, which is about 40 miles east of Coeur d'Alene, recognized the vehicle as one that had stopped at her station hours before Duncan was arrested. The employee suspected that the girl wandering around the station might have been Shasta, but she didn't confront her as nothing appeared to be out of the ordinary between her and Duncan. The employee and her manager notified authorities after reviewing surveillance camera footage. And in that footage, only Shasta and Duncan had been seen. So Dylan's not in that footage.
Listen, all I'm going to say is not everyone can be a hero that works at Denny's.
I know.
Yeah. Come on, Kellogg.
I know.
But anyway, on July 4th, woo, I guess. Independence Day of 2005 investigators found human remains at a remote makeshift campsite in the Lolo National Forest area near St. Regis, Montana. The remains were sent to the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, for DNA testing, and they were positively identified as those of Dylan Grohn. During the trial, it emerged that Duncan shot Dylan at point-blank range by holding a sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun to his head. Mm. And as sad as that is, it's about to get worse, because most of the information known about the death of Brenda Mark Slade and Dylan, unfortunately, were given by Shasta.
Yeah, it's, I think that is like the, doing the research for this case, that's probably the most unnerving thing about the whole situation is the fact that Shasta gives the authorities basically all the information of all of it, of like every second of it. And it's just, it's really terrible. And So at the beginning of it, because when we started, we just talked about their bodies being found. But Shasta told investigators that her mother called her into the living room where she saw Duncan wearing black gloves and holding a gun. Her captor tied her mother's hands with nylon zip ties and did the same to her mother's fiance and her brother Slade. Shasta and Dylan were removed from the house and placed inside the stolen rental car. While she waited with her brother, she heard her mother's fiance scream out and then saw her injured older brother staggering away from the entrance to the house. Duncan then bludgeoned the three to death. According to Shasta, neither her nor Dylan witnessed the murders. She and Dylan were taken to other locations where they were repeatedly molested and tortured for 6 weeks. And she said that they drove a long distance and stayed in two different campsites. While in one of the campsites, Duncan told her of having beaten her family members to death with a hammer. And I know that the first time that we talked about this, we kind of brought up the fact too that obviously Duncan is a pedophile. And, you know, pedophiles typically are... my brain is like blanking on the word, that they are opportunistic predators. And so in the situation with Slade, because Slade was still within Duncan's range of like interest, which is terrible to say. But it is, you kind of have to think too that like, Duncan could handle both of the younger kids because they were 8 and 9, you know, Shasta's 8, Dylan's 9. And I believe that Slade was, did we say he was 13? Mm-hmm. So he's older, you know what I mean? He's an older kid. He is definitely going to push back. He's going to fight back. So that's just terrible. And obviously Duncan is doing what he does best, which is moving around. So he's moving around, he's driving for long distances, he's staying in campsites with them. He's really trying to stay off the grid, right. Because I'm sure that there's no doubt in his mind, like what he's done.
She also told investigators how Dylan was murdered.
Yeah.
So Duncan insisted that Dylan's death was an accident. Shasta was standing on the other side of Duncan's Jeep when she heard a loud boom. She ran to the other side of the Jeep where she saw Dylan lying on the ground screaming. Duncan was apparently digging through a clear plastic box looking for beer when a shotgun that had also been kept in that box went off, hitting Dylan in the stomach. Shasta said that she saw Duncan put the shotgun to Dylan's head and pull the trigger, but it failed to go off. Yeah. Dylan begged Duncan not to kill him, but Duncan reloaded the shotgun, put it back to Dylan's head and pulled the trigger, and Dylan was killed instantly.
That is like, it's
there's not words. There's not words.
There's nothing. There's nothing. And I do believe, I mean, as fucked up as this is, I do believe that Duncan did. Obviously, I don't think that Duncan meant to shoot him the first time. And according to Shasta, immediately after killing Dylan, Duncan started crying and told her that he only killed him to put him out of his misery. And that's just so rough. There was a public memorial service that was held for Dylan on July 16, 2005, which would have been his 10th birthday. And that was held at a ministry in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Right. She also reported that Duncan nearly killed her. Days after killing Dylan, she said he'd given her the choice to be killed either by strangulation or with a gun. Shasta chose the former, and Duncan proceeded to wrap a rope around her neck and pull it tight. However, Shasta begged Duncan to stop using his nickname Jet, and he immediately stopped. He then asked her if she would like to meet his mother, to which he responded yes, and the two drove to Coeur d'Alene. And that's when they stopped at the Denny's restaurant where Shasta was recognized and then rescued. Yeah. And we've talked about this before, in a different case that is slipping my mind at the moment, but Shasta is so smart, and yes, you know, she appealed to him. She, in a way, is tricking him into convincing him, and it calming him, and it saves her life.
Yeah.
And we've talked about a couple of women who have done this. And I hate that I'm about to say this, but what an important skill to have. To de-escalate, and for such a young girl to understand, you know, that she could try to talk to him. And then when he's like, "Do you want to meet my mom?" She's like, "Yeah, sure." You know, like,
yeah. Well, and Duncan he's clearly, like, you know, we've talked about this a few times, that clearly mentally he's not well. You know, in some of the interviews that they do with him, that the authorities do with him, he talks about loving Shasta, that he loves her. Mm. And so it's just so much. And there is just a few things with this, like, Duncan is, he's just, I, there's just, he's just aggravating in general, but, like, I think we talked about too with this last record of this, that prior to his arrest for the murder, Duncan maintained, like, a personal website that he titled The Fifth Nail, which is this man just a cringy, just steaming pile of shit. But according to lore, in addition to four nails used to pierce the body of Jesus Christ in his crucifixion, there was a fifth nail that was taken away and hidden by the Romans. And Duncan adopted the name of that for his website and his blog. And it's the idea that this man was blogging, like, I just can't. And the website depicted Duncan's day-to-day life as a sex offender. And in the blog, he does deny being a pedophile, and he claimed to have been sexually abused as a child. And, you know, I do believe him. I do think that he was sexually abused as a child. I feel like I'm not shocked by that. I'm like, that makes sense.
But he also is a pedophile.
Yes. In practice, yes, he for sure is.
Yeah,
for sure he is. But after being imprisoned, he does maintain a blog spot. And I'm sure that you listeners are like, how is that possible? And he there's a lot of different theories behind this, because obviously he's in death row, or he's on a death row. And there start to be posts to his blog spot. And it looks like the posts were made by somebody called Silenced, who I was like, okay. And the person who posted, I guess, was claiming that they received letters from Duncan to post on the site on his behalf. But we've talked about really how harsh this case is, especially coming from Shasta, but there was a little bit of, like, fallout, because the jurors who imposed the death penalty, so the jurors that were on Duncan's case, ended up being offered counseling in order for them to cope with the horrific evidence they had to see during the trial. And like I said, this is pretty rough, so just be warned.
I remember this, and I don't
even know. Part of the evidence viewed in court was a 33-minute video depicting a nude Duncan torturing, physically and verbally assaulting, and sexually abusing a nude and restrained boy that they did identify as Dylan Grown. The video showed this abuse conducted in various interior areas of what appeared to be like a single level wooden shed or a small cabin of some kind. Other evidence included human remains, a wire noose from the cabin interior, and other videos of Duncan's continued torture of Dylan. During one of the videos, obviously a child can be heard screaming, while a naked Duncan shouted, "The devil's here, boy, the devil himself. The devil likes to watch children suffer and cry." So at no point in time, I'd like to point out that they don't have video of Duncan abusing Shasta, even though he definitely did sexually abuse her as well. But for somebody that says that he's not a pedophile, he's very clearly a pedophile, and he also very clearly has a preference for young boys. So
I can't even, it's really hard to find words for what an absolute horrific piece of shit this man is.
Yeah,
like I am never speechless, but I remember when you said that during our first recording, I don't even know. I don't even know, you know?
Yep.
You hope that the world is better than that, and it's not.
Yeah. I mean, and he definitely, so in the end of all of it, Duncan was indicted by a federal grand jury on 10 counts of kidnapping, kidnapping resulting in death, aggravated sexual abuse of a minor, and sexual exploitation of a child resulting in death, and other crimes related to illegal firearm possession, vehicle theft. He also obviously stood trial for murder, which is what landed him on death row. And he was not executed, though. He actually died in October of 2020, so not too long ago. And he died from cancer. Basically, he had a brain tumor, and surgery could not help him. But yeah, so he died in, sorry, not in October. He died more recently than that. Sorry, his surgery was in October of 2020. That didn't fix his cancer, and he died in March of 2021, and he was 58 years old. So also sorry if anybody can hear Fitzy crunching on his toy. But that's it. That's it for Duncan.
But to end this on like a little bit of a lighter note, I know that through the absolute nightmare that Shasta went through, she has done something pretty remarkable to honor her brothers.
Yeah, in 2016, so she was actually 19 when she started this. She started a petition that she called Slade and Dylan's Law. And she did this in honor of obviously her two brothers. In the petition description, she stated that convicted sex offenders should not be let out of jail. And this would effectively mean that the three strike rule for violent sex offenders would be reduced to one strike. And actually, by the time that the petition closed, she had 51,820 supporters on that petition. So quite a large amount of support. But yeah, so, and we've talked about that before, that, you know, victims that go on to live their life and kind of daily put in the work to kind of heal what they've been through, or like make things a little better for other people too that are in the same situation that they've been or in similar situations. It remarkable. Yeah, it is remarkable, and it definitely shows humanity.
Yeah, and yeah. Strength of character, you know,
for sure.
It would take, I mean, she's much stronger than I. I mean, if I had gone through something like that, I, you know.
Yeah, she's definitely.
You hope that you could be as strong as Shasta has been, and
for sure.
Find the strength to like give back to, you know, trying to help people who might be in the same situation. Like that's,
yeah,
that's kick ass.
Yeah, it is for sure.
So, you know, that's, I mean, obviously there's not a silver lining to anything of this. But it is, I feel, a good note to end it on because, she could have easily, you know, taken this experience and it could have, I'm sure it did. I don't want to say she could have let it ruin her whole life because I'm sure, I mean, she's never going to be the same. But she's using it to make the world a better place. And that is, I mean,
yeah.
That's all you can ask for, you know?
Yeah, truly.
And nobody should ask anything of her. She should only have chocolate ice cream for breakfast for the rest of her life, you know, like,
yes, correct.
Should be a rule. Yeah. A law.
She's done. She gets to,
she doesn't have to work. She can travel and just, yeah. I mean, that's what should happen. But she probably still has to pay car bills and stuff like that. So, yeah. But you know, so that's the case of Duncan. And
hopefully we get to keep this one.
Yeah.
We don't have to.
Can you hear us is the question, you know, like, can you in fact hear us? And if you can, good. That means it worked.
Thank God.
You know, we're doing this remotely now. We're not in the same room anymore. Because my best friend is in California and I'm here in Texas. So you know, we're trying to make this work. And, so we appreciate you guys going with us on this new like chapter of the Redhead Report where we're doing it remotely and maybe things are a little bit off. Mm. I think the first episode we did over Zoom sounded fine.
Yeah, it was good.
And hopefully I
personally thought the quality was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, and the editing wasn't that bad either. So hopefully this one is much better because I was editing the last one and I was like, Alicia, we can't. We simply cannot. And this includes, you know, the first 10 episodes that we did where Alicia's mic wasn't even on. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, that was better than what we had from this last time. So we, you know, we are keeping ourselves to a standard and, you know, we love making this podcast and we want you to love listening to it and not have your ears be it like give you a headache. So
bleeding.
Yeah, just bleeding. So thank you for, I mean, you didn't know that we had to do this. So we could have kept it a secret and nobody would have known, but we like to be transparent here. You guys are a part of this team as much as Alicia and I are. And there's a couple ways that you can like up your membership of this team. I don't think that's you want to be a team member. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. That's redhead_report. That's where we post, you know, when things are coming up or interesting stuff that we find. That's also where we can communicate with you guys. We love getting messages from you guys. You can also go to anchor.fm/theredheadreportpod and you can become a donor, not of organs. just a heavy silence.
I was just going to say, although what, are you in need of an organ or?
You know, I mean, I'm a donor. It's on my license. I would love.
I can't donate.
You can't donate.
No, because I'm type 1. I can't donate.
That's sad.
I mean, I guess. Sorry, science, you're not getting this one.
I really want to be in a science museum. Because one time I went, this is unrelated. Am I having a stroke? One time I went to the science museum and they were like poking a heart with a stick.
Wow, what a lovely visit to the museum.
We had to turn off our video so I can't see her face. And so it's just, I'm just being met with silence. Anyway, I don't, it's fine. But I'd love that to be my heart, is all I'm saying. For children to look at and go, oh my God. Because that's what I did. But anyway, you can become a donor and you can donate, like, even if you donate $1 a month, I personally donate to myself $4 a month. And myself and Alicia, I'm not skimming anything off the top. Don't think that. but that we're trying to create a little nest egg so that we can create more content for you guys and like maybe expand things so that, you know, like we can get a subscription to Zoom so we don't have to stop every 40 minutes, you know? If you, no pressure, but if you wanted to do that, we would be eternally grateful and we will shout you out at the end of every episode. We will say your name from these lips. I know, Duncan, it's time to end this episode. And I'm not talking about Duncan, the guy we just talked about. That is Alicia's dog, Duncan, who was not named after this man.
No, for sure not.
Named after Dunkin' Donuts, if I am not mistaken.
He is, yes.
But anyway, we're going to go ahead and end this episode. Is there anything else that we should say?
I don't think so. I don't have anything.
Oh. Well, next week, I promise we won't talk about a pedophile. Because those are rough. I promise we'll talk about a nice, calm murder of some sort. Or maybe just a true crime. There's a couple of things that we want to talk about that we're not really sure how to go about. So we'd actually love your opinion on this. So just like we're going to do a poll in our Instagram story and just a yay or a nay from y'all about whether we should talk about the Johnny Depp case, which is still developing. So we might like hold off on that till we have some more information. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we also really want to talk about Tammy Faye.
Yeah.
Which I think would be a romp to talk about because that is quite the story.
About that one in the past too, that that one is a lot of information.
That might be a two-parter just because it is so much information. Sure. But it is something that both of us are interested in, and we also both just watched The Eyes of Tammy Faye, the movie as well as the documentary. So, you know, I think it'd be an interesting one to talk about. So we're going to do a little Instagram poll just to see like if you guys like those cases, if you're interested in those cases. And then sometime in the future, we'll make it happen if you guys are on board.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. I guess I should just, you know, stop putting off the inevitable and say my thing. Be kind to each other. Black Lives Matter. Stop Asian hate. Get vaccinated. This is old news now. Come on. Yeah,
but still, you should still get vaccinated.
If you haven't gotten vaccinated, what are you doing? Also, there's a new strand. So, like, protect yourself. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.